Today's Mishnah in Masechet Taharot is Perek Beit, Mishnah Beit. Now, this Mishnah is Zoche to a long, long daf in Masechet Chulin, because it's a very complex Mishnah, if you want to look into all of its underlying logic. So what I suggest is that first we just go through the Mishnah without all of the underlying logic, and then we'll just run over outside the story of the development of the machlokas here between Rebbe Eliezer and Rebbe Yehoshua in terms of the details, because it's actually so enlightening. It gives a general sense of the approach to all of these dinim that we've been talking about mashkin and the sensitivity for tuma and so on. All right, so let's first take a simple look at the Mishnah, and that is, as you know, and this is very interesting, because we're moving on from the opening of our Masechet that had to do with Nivlat Ov Tameh. Now, Nivlat Ov Tameh has the strange capacity of being Metame a human through eating something. Now, it's not really an Ochlin that's being Metame the person, right? The Tumas Ochlin of the Nivlas Of Tahor, which we discussed at length, the interrelationship between the Tumas Nevela of the Nivlas Of Tahor and the Din of Tumas Ochlin on the Nivlas Of Tahor. And that was the reason, remember, of the Gavi rule of Sofer Latame Tuma Chamura. It doesn't require Hechsher, it doesn't require neither Hechsher of Mayim, and it doesn't require the Hechsher of Tuma. But we kept it very separate in our minds. But the truth is that there is a bottom line to it. The bottom line is somebody puts something that is a foodstuff and he puts it into his mouth and he swallows it and it becomes tummy. So interestingly enough, even though there is no case ever, even including Nivlas Of, where actually a person becomes tummy from eating tummy food, because the person didn't become tummy from eating Tumas Eichlin, in the case of Nivlas Of, he became tummy from eating a nevela. It happens to be that the nevela only becomes a nevela to be metame in the Beis Ablia. Tremendous chiddush. Where normally even the Beis Ablia would be called Beit HaSitarim, Sitarim. It would be a hidden location. It wouldn't even be considered to be a negia bichlal, to be metame. So it's a totally new halacha. Absolute chiddush. Okay. But it is similar to this Mishnah, where the Chachomim were gozer, that it is possible to actually, strangely enough, to become tame from something that can never be metame a human, namely Eichlin. Eichlin are not shayach to ever being an avatuma, and they cannot be metame Adam. And the Chachomim were gozer, the weirdest thing. And that is that if you eat a shear, and this is the shear of a chatzi pras. Now, we're very familiar with the shear of a pras. We are? Yes. Because remember that achila is generally defined as the shear of kizayit bichtei achilas pras. Now, everybody remembers those words, but they don't realize a pras is a particular shear. It's a machlokas, whether it's a shear of Rashi. According to Rashi, we're talking about two beitzim. According to the Rambam, we're talking about 1.5 beitzim for the chatzi pras over here. But kidei achilas pras would therefore be either the 3 beitzim that we would have according to the Rambam, or the 4 beitzim. But here, the question of the chatzi pras would be exactly half of that. So it's significantly more than the shear, general shear that we apply either to achila, which is kizayis, or a kebeitza, which is the shear of tumas eichlin. And in this case, it's the shear of a chatzi pras, either 1.5 or 2 beitzim. Fine. The Chachomim made a gezeira that if you're eating food that is tameh, it will actually be metameh your body. With a tumat gviya, your body will become tameh. Now, the basis of the issue over here is the problem of eichlei truma. The problem is that people drink while they still have food in their mouth. So sometimes you feel you need a drink to swallow or whatever. The person is eating truma. He feels like he's choking and he wants to take a drink at the same time. If he drinks mashkim that are tmeim can be metame the truma in his mouth. And therefore, he would then be eating truma tmeya, which is a tremendous chiyuv of misa bidei shamayim. This is really chomor. So because of that, the Rabbanan were mitaken, listen, if we're going to be drinking water while eating truma, let's first talk about while eating truma, that water has got to be totally tar. And therefore, if it would be shayach to being metame the truma, we're going to make you, the eater, the swallower of the water, tame, and that way, obviously, you're not going to be around truma when you're drinking this water. And that way, we protect you from eating truma tamea. Now, that's the essential nekuda. And even though, obviously, normal, regular people, as opposed to barneas, don't eat truma, but there was a low plug, the chachomim, where I could be able to make a special halacha about truma that only kohanim become tame. So because of that, the din by trumas and tyrus is a universal din. Applies to all people. The basis of the problem is indeed a problem that would only affect Kohanim. But we don't make different dinim of Tumah V'Taira in terms of what is Tameh and what is Tar to make a difference between Kohanim and others. So, taking this for granted, what is the level of Tumah that a person who actually eats Eichlin that are Tmeim, that he becomes Tameh? So, now remember, we're going to see in the logic of this when we go through the Gemara afterwards, Bezrat Hashem, we're going to see how the real focus over here was because not Ochlin per se, but because of Mashkin. But we'll get to that in a moment. The Gezerah here is on any type of Ochlin or Mashkin. And the problem over here would be if it's Mashkin, so then if you're eating something that's tameh, suppose you take a drink of wine that's truma. So then you would end up being mitameh, what it is that you're drinking. So therefore, if we make sure that you don't have tameh food in your mouth, and we'll get to the opposite mashkin considerations in the machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and Yeshua, but if you were eating something tameh, you're not going to get near truma that is wine that is tahar, because if we make you tameh, then you know you're going to pass over truma. So that is the basic idea. What tuma do we give you? So Reb Eliezer says, if you eat something that's a rishon, you become a rishon. If you eat something that's a sheni, you become a sheni. If you eat something that's a shlishi, you become a shlishi. So therefore, we keep it for dummies. Anything that you eat, you become the same. Now, the reason that normally there's no such thing, is it? Normally, of course, we attenuate by one level. So why don't we attenuate over here? Because if we attenuated, what would we have to say? That if you eat an ochel sheni, that then you become a shlishi. But the problem is, if you become a shlishi, we're not going to protect the yayin of the truma. Because let's say you're eating eichlin, that is tameh, you don't realize that the problem is that we're afraid if you take a drink of wine, it's going to become tameh by touching the sheni in your mouth. We're trying to encourage you not to touch the wine, right? Well, we can't encourage you not to touch the wine if you're only a shlishi, because a shlishi is not able to be metameh the truma. So you won't stay away from truma. Therefore, we're going to have to make a sheni, right? Otherwise, we're not going to keep him away from truma. Okay, says, therefore, Reb Eliezer, if we're going to have to make a sheni, so then let's just keep it for dummies. Somebody eats something that is tameh, he becomes whatever that thing is. So if you eat a rishon, you become a rishon. What's the difference? Bottom line is, even if you were a sheni, you'd have to stay away from truma. So let's just keep it simple. Obviously, you can't just keep it simple and stupid. So the Gemara is going to explain that actually Reb Eliezer is relying on the fact that it is possible to go through a non-attenuated tumor if mashkim are in the middle. That's the whole basis of it, which makes it a continuation of the past Mishnayos. Since if you would have been metame mashkin, the mashkin would have become a tchila automatically, so then what's so crazy about saying that then it would still make the ochlin the equivalent of whatever it is that made it tame in the first place? That's the real thing. But I'm talking about keeping the Mishnah simple. If I'm looking for a way for dummies to appreciate what the din is of eating Ochlin Tmeim, the simplest thing is to say, if you eat Ochlin Tmeim, you become Tomei in the same way that the Ochlin are Tomei. And that protects the Truma perfectly well. And it doesn't confuse anybody. And in the Gemara, I'll explain why it makes sense and it's not some insane arbitrary statement. That, yes. But the Mishnah is quite straightforward. You always become the tuna of what it is that you ate. Excellent. Rabbi Yeshua says, no, all that we're interested over here is that the person should be a sheni. Isn't that true? The fact that if he eats Rishon, he should be a Rishon, doesn't add not one whit in our takana. Because the person's going to have to stay away from this truma wine, whether the food is a Rishon or a sheni. And therefore, making him a Rishon is not going to add anything, because if we make him a Sheni, he's also going to have to stay away from Truma, because he's going to be Metame Truma. So what's the point? Instead of going against the normal Dinim of Tuma, let's stick to the normal Dinim of Tuma, except we'll say that if you eat a Sheni, you're still a Sheni. One thing that's important. Because if we don't say, if you eat a sheni, you're a sheni, then we're not helping. Because the whole idea over here is that you've got sheni food in your mouth, and you may take a drink of wine of truma. Okay, so there we have to say, don't get near any truma, mister, you're a sheni. All right? So then all we need to do is to say, whether you eat a rishon, or whether you eat a sheni, you're going to be a sheni. Okay? And then if you eat a shlishi, yes, 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 you would be a shlishi, but I don't get away with just saying that, because I've got a problem with saying that. Obviously, it's true that if you eat a shlishi, you become a shlishi. So what does that do to you? Well, a shlishi is not allowed to eat truma, but he is allowed to touch truma. Okay, so that's fine. I don't care if he touches the truma, because a shlishi is not going to hurt the truma, and it wouldn't have been a problem anyway, because a shlishi will not be metame the truma, all right? But I've got another problem. My problem is that you're still going to have an issue when it comes to eichlin that are kadesh, and that is the question of whether a shlishi, this is a separate machlok, because we have later on in this parak, is there a din of chulin shenaseh al tairas truma, and is there a din of chulin shenaseh al tairas hakodesh? Now we'll keep this for that Mishnah to get into the basis of this machlokas, but we're going to see later on that the din is that if a person eats a shlishi of chulin al tairas truma, then it's true he becomes only a shlishi, but he becomes a sheni binogia kodesh. And therefore, if he were to touch kodesh, he would be metame the kodesh. Since that's Rabbi Yeshua Shita, I can't just say that if he's a shlishi across the board, because it isn't true. If he's a shlishi, he is still going to be a sheni binogea kodesh, which actually makes the way that I put it, says Rabbi Yeshua, pretty clear. Because what I'm saying is, no matter what you eat, if you eat a rishon, sheni. If you eat a sheni, sheni. If you eat a shlishi, sheni. But only in terms of touching kodesh, not in terms of coming into contact with truma. All right, so that makes it, for me, the simplest statement of the Mishnah, is that no matter what you eat, you're a sheni for something. That's the easiest way to say it, which allows Rabbi Yeshua to give a simple meaning to the whole thing. So now the question is, how are you eating a shlishi? There ain't no such animals as shlishi of chulin, and you're not allowed to be eating the shlishi of truma. So what are we saying, that you're eating truma or kodesh, which is a shlishi? You're not allowed to be eating that, so we're not going to make a gzera of people that are eating iser. That's not the issue. So where the heck did we come up with somebody who's eating chulin as a shlishi if there's no such thing? Ah, but there is such a thing. And that would be the chulin shenasu al tires truma. I'm not pronouncing it the way the Mishnah writes it, because throughout Shas, we don't use that language, litara truma, but it's bechulin shenasu al tara truma. Now, the truth is there's meaning to the word litara truma in cases where you're making chulin without a specific makshava in mind that you're keeping it tar for truma, but you intend to be using it with truma, and therefore it's done for the purposes of tiras truma, which is the equivalent of al tiras truma that we also see from the Gemara and Chulin. But the general rule is, Chulin shenasu al tiras truma have the same din as truma, which means that even though it's only your imagination, you're a very, very kodesh person, and you're a kohen, and often have truma in your house, and you want to establish a level of taira in your home that takes shlishi very seriously, because what if you get confused between a truma that actually is a shlishi and you thought it was chulin? So you're makpid on everything in your house. You want to treat it as if it's truma. So that virtual truma is also mekabel a virtual tuma midrabbanan. And therefore, our Mishnah that's talking about ha'ochel ochel shlishi is talking about chulin shenase al tiras truma. The question of whether there's such a thing as chulin shenase al tiras hakodesh, or whether that's too off the wall, there's a limit to how from we're going to let you be. Though to say, I want everything in my house to be on a madrega of kodesh, that's a machlokas that we'll see later. But the question that the Gemara is medayik in chulin is, can we be medayik from here that there's only such a thing as al tiras truma, and there is no such thing as tiras hakodesh? Fine. This we're going to be discussing later on in our perek. Okay, so we end up with a straightforward, simple Mishnah. According to Rabbi Eliezer, a person is always as tameh as the food that he ate. Simple. According to Rabbi Yeshua, a person who eats food that's tamei is always a sheni. Unless you're talking about eating shlishi and you're not a sheni then if you don't have any kodesh around to apply it to. Fine. True. But the simple idea is that you become a sheni. The purpose of all of this is to prevent you from being matame truma that's in your mouth, and you're not going to be or to be matame truma that you're going to be drinking and putting in your mouth, because you already have oichlin in your mouth, that's tameh. And therefore, we made this gezerah to protect truma and applied it to all, kohen or yisrael. And meanwhile, we see that ein achinami, there is such a thing in which even a yisrael would have a chumrah of truma in his house because of the fact that he's eating everything al tiras truma. Now, as I mentioned to you, we're not going to have time to do this. Okay, but I would like to go through the logic of the Mishnah tomorrow, because we presented it in its simple totsa'ot. There's a lot of discussion which is very eye-opening, because in the discussion it really becomes clear why this Mishnah belongs precisely here, after the whole sugyas of the interrelationship of Mashkin, that was started at the end of the first parak and has gone on through the previous Mishnah, how Mashkin are central to transferring Tuma with the same level of Chumrah without attenuation. And that's how the Machlokas Rebbe Eliezer, Rebbe Yoshua, actually belongs exactly here, Binogan understanding of Mashkin. to be continued, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow. I hope you find this as exciting and non-esoteric as I find it. I don't know why, but I'm so attracted to these unbelievable sugyas of Tumah V'Taira that I just find them so, you know, mind-boggling, discussing these concepts that are so totally abstract and that, like, they take on such a reality when you're living in that completely different space. You know, it would be like gaining a new sense of being able to walk around sensing magnetic fields, you know, or sensing gravitational fields in space. I mean, it's just like a very broadening kind of exercises. I find it to be amazing.
Okay, every time we say the word Tahara, like the Shama Tahara.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's like a whole different level of awareness, which of course is the whole point, as I've said so many times. Das, that's what Tyrus is all about. Different level of awareness, and it includes that spatial awareness that's all within of Tumas Ayal and Tumas Bia in terms of Mitzera. So space and fields and things that are completely invisible to your normal senses, it's all in this Das of Tyrus. I think it would be a good idea to review the shitas of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua in terms of their broader understanding, as the Gemara talks about in Chulin. And what we had until now was a pretty straightforward and a very simplistic view of the machlokas. And according to that, we had an easy way of remembering the Mishnah, which is great. And in terms of its easy approach, what we said was, look, all that you need to remember is if a person has an achila of oichlin that are tmeim, because of our takona, we're worried about the fact that he might be metame truma by taking a drink of wine that's truma. So the deal is that we always put him into a position where that food in his mouth is going to make him whatever the food is. If the food is a Rishon, makes him a Rishon, which will keep him away from Truma. If the food is a Sheni, makes him a Sheni, which will keep him away from Truma. And if the food is a Shlishi, then he's a Shlishi, which will not keep him away from Truma, because he doesn't have to be kept away from Truma. After all, a Shlishi is not Metani, and therefore would not have any effect on Truma if he takes Truma wine. So that's a very convenient way to do things. Now, the convenience of it is not an excuse. Because remember, as we've explained many times, there's two elements in every takana derabbana. There's the element of what are we trying to achieve, and then there's the element of what is the mechanism that we're using to achieve it. So you cannot create a situation that achieves the end that you want if you cannot supply the logic to a mechanism which would allow such a thing to happen. So therefore, the Mishnah, even though it's very straightforward, is leaving out the whole discussion in the Gemara, which is focused on how do you do something that makes no sense. Okay, so we haven't really explained anything but the simple rule that allows us to achieve that anybody who could be metame truma would view himself as being tame, even though he isn't really, but he might have such food in his mouth, and memele, he'll stay away from the wine of the truma, right? We've understood how we can achieve that. Now, even that, Rabbi Yoshua says, why should we do it that way? What we could do is we could say that no matter what kind of food you eat, whether it's Ochel Rishon or Ochel Sheni, you can be called a Sheni. Because you don't need to ever be a Rishon, so why should we turn the Rishon into Ochel Rishon becomes a Rishon? But we could make you a Sheni, that would be consistent. And if you eat an Ochel Sheni, you would also be a Sheni, and that would achieve what we want to achieve, which is keep away from Truma. An Ochel Shlishi is also a Sheni, but that's only Binogea Kodesh, because this idea of a Shlishi is not going to affect Truma, but it will affect Kodesh, and therefore it would be, in fact, consistent to say Sheni is the best way to say it. Because according to me, the easiest rule is that if you're a Sheni, you're going to be a problem for Kodesh, and you're going to be a problem for Truma, and you're going to be a problem even if you became a Sheni than way you normally would become a Sheni, by being in touch with the Rishon. I'm obviously not Oichlin. They wouldn't be able to make that sort of takana. Takana is that the Oichlin are Matamayim. So as far as Rabbi Yeshua is concerned, the solution for dummies is to make everybody a Sheni, albeit not for everything, but everybody's a Sheni, and they need to be careful if they're going to be around a Kodesh, even if they had eaten Shlishi. Okay, so then that would be the question about a separate question, which we're going to discuss later, between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Benogea, some din of Shlishi, whether it would be able to be Metame Kodesh, this Shlishi Derabar. Now, as far as what the mechanism would be, I mean, he has as much problem as Rabbi Eliezer does, because how in the world would an Ochel Sheni be a Sheni? If he was only Ochel Sheni, then where would people make sense out of a completely arbitrary din that seems to have no relationship to any of the mechanisms that we know, and it's nonetheless saying something that is achieving an end without a mechanism? So, in order to get a better sense, I wanted to take one of our learning times to go through the sugya briefly in Chulin, which gives us a deeper appreciation of the general mechanisms that we're talking about over here in terms of Mashkin and so on. And we see from it a beautiful interrelationship of the sugya with the first perek and with the beginning theme of our Masechet, which related Niflas of Tahor to the concept of Tumas Oichlin because of its surface relationship. And we pointed this out yesterday. That Niflas of Tahor is really a brand new idea, but the funny thing is that it's also an Oichlin, and it turns out that you're going to end up really being Tameh by eating it, not really because it's the swallowing it, but again, on the surface, it seems to be very related. Fine. So, ready? Yeah.
Daf, please, so I can follow inside.
Daf Lamed Dalet. So, and Daf Lamed Dalet Chulin. So the Gemara says like this. Rabbi Eliezer tainas to Rabbi Yeshua that what I'm saying makes a heck of a lot of sense. Why is this? Because an ochel, we find, is more chomor than the ochel. The ochel is the person who's eating. I won't use the Gemara's lashon because people are not sensitive enough to ochel and ochel. So let's just use ma'achal for ochel and ochel for the eater. And that way people won't get confused. Okay. So says Rabbi Eliezer, look, when it comes to a nivlas of tahar, okay, that's a food stuff. Now, Nivlas of Tahor is not metame anything on its own, right? And it's not going to be metame a person, for sure not. But if somebody eats the Nivlas of Tahor, what happens to him? Oh my gosh, he's even metame begadim. So it makes sense that where we're dealing with eating something, of course, in this case, it's just Tumas Eichlin and not this new whole idea. But still, you see that eating is somehow something that the Torah gives. And nobody thinks that's crazy. I touch it and nothing happens to me. I eat it and I become tummy. So what better model would there be for this gezerah that we're making, that we're saying we're eating and we're going to be metame you more than the food, the same way that Nivlas Of is Matamiyu, much more than the food, right? So why should we say, if we're actually modeling it on this concept of the Nivlas Of, why should I agree with you that we should make the eater less Tameh than the food that he's eating? That doesn't make any sense. So why should there be an attenuation of the Tumah? Okay, Rabbi Yeshua says to that, ah, come off it. Nivas of Tahor isn't really no gea eating, and it's not really part of saying you're more chomer, the food is more, is going to be less chomer than the eater. I mean, it's a completely different concept, and it would take an extra special dummy to really think that it's in any way related. It's a chiddush. And it's a chiddush that you become tame because the ov turns into an avela only at that instant that it's in your beis ablia. And normally that wouldn't even be considered maga because it's maga beis asistarim. It's a ridiculous connection. It has nothing to do with it. So scotch that. We are not modeling this takana on nivlas ov tahor. Nobody is that dumb. Okay. So therefore, I'll tell you. I think that generally speaking, the ma'achal, the foodstuff, is more chomer than the person who eats it, because what's the shear of tumas eichlin? A kibetza. And what's the shear of this din of the tumas gvia, vachila? It would have to be kichatzi pras. Kichatzi pras, that could be, according to Rashi, two beitzim. That's double the shear. And even according to Rambam, it's 50% larger. It's a beitz of a chetzi. So you see that we're more machmir on the foodstuff itself than we are on the person who's eating. Memela, it makes sense to make him a sheni. Okay, now obviously this doesn't help us for his own claim that a sheni is a sheni. So we'll get to that as we continue. To which Reb Eliezer says, that is ridiculous. What does the shear of a tuma have to do with the chumra of the tuma itself? There's no connection between them. These shiurim are halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, and they have nothing to do with the chumra of the tuma. Why in the world would that be a way to model things? Furthermore, what you're saying only addresses the first part of your psak, in which you're disagreeing with me, and you are saying that you're always going to be less than what you ate because it's attenuated. But you said yourself that if you eat a sheni, you become a sheni. How do you explain that? The very same thing that you said to me, what do you mean? How can we make you the same if we see that we always are more machmer on the food? So then why do you say if somebody eats sheni, it's a sheni? What's the mechanism? You just contradicted yourself. It should have been a shlishi. So here is the fascinating answer that Rabbi Yeshua gives about what the mechanism is that allows him to make a sheni into a sheni. Now, this relates back to the closing Mishnah that we had in the first perek, because we had exactly that situation. A sheni made a sheni, remember? How did the sheni make a sheni, according to everybody? If there was mashkin that were tofrim, so you had damp that was able to transfer the tumah of one of the kikros that we had, which was a sheni. And a sheni normally would not make a shlishi. But since in this case, anything which is nogea in a sheni that's a mashkin is chozer lios rishon. Oh, so now one kikar can be metame the next kikar by taking the mashkin that's on the surface of the kikar, turning it into a rishon, which then turns the other kikar that's attached to the mashkin into a sheni, which means that to the dummy, it looks like a sheni is making a sheni, even though it's only doing it by transferring it through mashkin, which are chozer lios rishon. See how much this has to do with everything that we learned before. So it's irresistible to see it in the context of the Gemara. It's like bringing in every last thing that we had spoken about, right? The whole first parak ends up being involved in this machlokas. So it's just so sweet. So because of that, since we know that a sheni can be osa sheni al yedei mashkin, and therefore, we now are able to achieve what it is that we're trying to achieve by utilizing the transfer through mashkin as the solution. So therefore, people are used to the idea of sheni making sheni. Fine. So obviously, I mean, the real point is that we're looking for a way to achieve our goals. It's interesting that many of the Mefarshim don't seem to recognize. I'm talking about the more modern Mefarshim. Don't seem to recognize that we have two separate issues that are involved here. One is the mechanism, and one is the goal in mind of the mechanism. It's a given, of course. This is not a reason. It's a given that that's what we're trying to achieve. We're just looking for the explanation of how we do it. So Rebbe Eliezer says, these mashkim that we're talking about over here, they themselves are not a sheni. They themselves are a rishon, because mashkim are always chozrin lios rishon. So if you're ready to build the logic here on the mashkin, then you should have agreed with me that basically even the person who eats the ochel rishon actually can become a rishon, because mashkin becomes a rishon. And you're telling me, I understand why it's one kikar to another kikar. What kind of strange comparison is that? You're telling me you're using mashkin. And you're yelling at me, how can something that ate a Rosheni become, ate a Rishon become a Rishon? Why would that be true? What do you mean? That's exactly what Mashkin do. Why are you talking to me about Mashkin that are used as an interface between one Kikar and another Kikar, when the correct thing to do is to say, well, Mashkin are always Chosun Leo's Rishon, and they become basically, even though you touched an ochel sheni, the mashkin become a rishon. So then you should basically agree with me. No? I mean, why not? Now, the truth is that this is not much of a question, because in reality, the special takana of mashkin that are chozrin lios rishon is only because of a gavi concept. And that is because we're talking about mashkin, and mashkin are alulim lekabel tuma. That means that they are something that, since they don't require heksher, but on the contrary, they are the mechanism of heksher, they are always very likely to contract tuma. And because of that, we want to make them more chomer. So what Rabbi Yeshua is really saying is, I'm not comparing it to mashkin. Obviously, mashkin are unique because of the fact that they're alulim lekabel tuma. I want to compare it to ochlin, which is what we're talking about over here. However, ochlin through mashkin are able to be the same. Sheni makes a sheni. So that's what I'm saying over here, that the sheni makes a sheni. Okay, Rebbe Eliezer says, look, once you're inserting mashkin, I mean, this is not a real model, for heaven's sakes. You're just trying to tell me that there's a mechanism to make things just as chomer. So then there's also a mechanism to make things more chomer. You know, I mean, like, what? Why would you stop at kikar to kikar if you can learn kikar to mashkin? And therefore, you should be willing to go all the way and say that, you know, you could become a rishon. Fine. Furthermore, I don't understand your other statement that a shlishi also becomes a sheni. I mean, now you're totally off the wall. First you start yelling at me, how is it possible that there shouldn't be attenuation? Then you give me this logic about mashkin, and then you go right ahead and pretend I'm not listening, and you're telling me that a shlishi is also going to be a sheni, which means that we're going to make it more calmer. So in other words, you basically agree with me totally, and now you're just bending everything to fit the output that you want, which is, give me a simple formula for dummies. You know, I don't like your formula for dummies. But, I mean, you're not being serious over here. Where would you get the idea that a shlishi would become a sheni? So on that, answered Rabbi Yoshua, I'm talking about truma. You ate an ochel shlishi of truma. And remember the takana. Ochel truma are considered to be tamei for kodesh. That's the point. So this is all based on the original takana that we have, that the taira of truma is considered to be tuma legabe kodesh. And that is the basis of the gezera of bigdei ochle truma midras lekodesh that we spoke about back in Parah. So therefore, this takes us all the way back to the beginning of our discussion. So that means that truma, and what this is based on, is a concept of, that we spoke about in terms of Hesach HaDaat, the central concept of Shmira that has to do with the Tyrus as the Seder that is built on Daat, the level of consciousness that is required to keep track of something that is Kodesh B'Kedushas Truma is less than the level of consciousness that is required for people who are active with Kodesh. They need to be much more aware of what it is that they're doing. So therefore, even though someone was maximally makpid, there's no chance, he tells you, no chance in the world that any tumah touch this thing because I'm eating it as truma. How would I allow something to touch it to become tameh? That's all very sweet for lesser humans like you who define the awareness level of not having something touch things the way you human animals do. But for real humans, they are much more sensitive, and therefore your level of shmira is like it wasn't watched at all. As far as we're concerned, you left it out in the field for anything at all to touch it. That is the concept. So because of that, since I hold that there is a basic halacha that we're all agreed on in the Gemara Chagiga, your begodim are considered to be midras. I mean, forget about stam tuma. The most chomor. I mean, it's insane. So you're eating truma, and somebody who wants to eat kodesh, who actually comes in touch with your clothing, has got to go to the mikvah. This is crazy, no? So if that's the case, then obviously you cannot have a tain on me why I wouldn't make it more tame. It's more tame because of the fact that indeed, since shmira for truma is not shmira for kodesh, so the oichal shlishi of things that were made on Tyrus truma are considered to be even worse for the oichlin hegdash, and you become a sheni lahegdash. So that, in fact, is the way that the Gemara explains the closing words, v'lo sheni l'truma. In other words, if you were nogea the truma, enochinam, you wouldn't passel it. And therefore, I was limiting this entirely to the concept of the chumrah of kodesh over truma. I personally had such a striking and sweet interaction of mamish this sense of lack of shmira. So it was very cute. So I went to this chasna in Boston, right? So now the chasna, I mean, it's a long story. It was absolutely crazy that this girl that had been selling all the original before the Bar Ilan thing came out. So there were these original early, they had been based on the work that people had done for Bar Ilan, but there were these early databases, and it was almost impossible to use them because you would need 20 megabytes to be able to, yeah, who had 20 megabytes? I mean, I've never heard of such a thing. You're going to pay thousands of dollars for a 20 megabyte drive, and you're going to use the whole drive. It's an amazing difference. So now your telephone holds 1,000 times more. Okay. But in those days, it was a big deal. Okay. So it was this girl that used to go around, and she's a wonderful girl, and she was the daughter, a sort of a rebellious daughter of one of the big Hasidic rabbanim in Yerushalayim. So she went into business. Anyway, so what happened was is that she got herself a shidduch in Boston. I was so excited. She got a shidduch. Okay. So she says, I want you to come to the wedding. Oh, she gives me a telephone number to call with the details. I call the number, and there's an answering machine, which is, you know, this is the Beis HaMedrash of such and such a Rebbe. What in the world? A Rebbe in Boston? I don't know what's going on. I come to the wedding, and it's in the big Hilton, you know, not like absolutely high class, nothing to do with Hasidus or anything. I walk in, and sure enough, there's the chassan and a big shrimal. All these Rebbes are attending. And half the audience is basically dressed in bikinis at the same time, together with these rebbes, right? So I go over to shake the hand of the chassan. No, he says, don't touch me. I just got back from the mikveh. So it's like a real sense of, oh my gosh, it's unbelievable. Anyway, it turned out that the same Rebbe was also the heir of, forgot it was the biggest company.
Redstone.
Yeah, right. Of all of the movies and it's still in the news, I know, because they're still splitting up it's still a mess. But anyway, it's a long story with a lot of extra pitchfkes, but this thing of, I don't get near the Am Haaretz in the stomach, I knew what it felt like to be on the receiving end of that. Very fascinating. Okay, Rabbi Osei, anyway, enough for our fun for today, and Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow we'll continue on.